international Emma Espiner is with me today, writer, doctor, and Raven Can, comedian, MC, and sitcom writer. I had the same experience with an IKEA bed. We had to make risers to lift the base so the mattresses sit on top. Makes for a very high bed, as it has drawers underneath. Scandinavians tend to be slimmer, so queen size is slightly smaller in Scandinavia. At least that's how it is in Denmark, where I'm from. And quite a bit of a severe go, Raven. That might be an answer for you.
Does Denmark have a queen? Or are they a democracy? Is this the problem here? Is their attitude towards their royal family? It's insulting if they have a giant queen mattress because then they're saying she's overweight or something.
Not sure. Anyway, Marianne might know who texted us. And quite a bit of response regarding flashing lights. We talk about that later. First up, though, on the panel, 5% of New Zealand houses lack at least one of the six basic amenities, including drinkable tap water, electricity, the toilet, and a kitchen sink. According to a new report out today from the Hekainga Oranga Housing and Health Research Program at the University of Otago, Wellington. And now the researchers analysed the 2018 New Zealand census to assess residents' access to drinkable tap water, electricity, cooking facilities, kitchen sink, a toilet, and a bath or shower. Now, the high rate of households with young children living without drinkable tap water is particularly concerning, says the authors of the report. Housing is a human right, and everyone should live in a dwelling that has basic necessary amenities, according to the United Nations. So to discuss is the report author, Helen Biggers, research fellow at Hekainga Oranga Housing and Health Research Program. Helen, kia ora.
Kia ora.
So that stat there, 1 in 25 children were living in dwellings without access to drinkable tap water. That's quite an extraordinary statistic.
Yes, it is. I've been horrified by it since the day I discovered it in the data lab. If you think about one out of a class of bubbling five-year-olds going home to somewhere where they can't learn how to brush their teeth because there isn't water in the tap, or not being able to be given water, tap water is the drink of choice. So they learn that, you know, to drink water, not to drink fizzy. It's just got these huge lifelong health implications.
So that's 4.2% of children under the age of five. This is from the 2018 census. Mm. Can you explain a bit more about that? What does that mean, though? Does that mean tap water that isn't drinkable in that household? Is it plumbing that might not be working as it should? What do we know?
We know that because this is such an important issue, Statistics New Zealand asked this question in the 2018 census. And people were just asked, do you have drinkable tap water in your dwelling? Right. So we don't know much beyond that. We don't know whether I strongly suspect it's going to vary a lot by where people are in the country. So in rural areas, it might be people on tank water,
right,
which is a bit dodgy, or a lot dodgy. And in other parts of the country, it might be people living in a garage without a tap.
Mm. Similarly, Helen, 2.3% of preschoolers were living without access to electricity.
Yes. And again, there will be some of, although the people in the set when they were answering the census question were asked to include an amenity if they thought it would be turned on again in the next short amount of time. So this is presumably people decided they weren't going to have electricity in the next couple of weeks either.
Right.
And so we don't know whether it's electricity turned off to the house or living in houses without electricity wired in, dwellings without electricity wired in.
Mm, certainly some very concerning statistics here. And what do you make of it? What's your response here?
Horrifying. I think the tap water for kids thing is probably, it's piqued everyone's interest. Yeah. Mm. And I mean, I used to work in Māori Public Health, and we had, every year we'd have a big campaign around why Māori, so water being the first drink option. And that was to try and prevent some of the consequences of, sugary drinks. It's really difficult for families because a big bottle of Coke is cheap. And you think you're just driving a campaign to drink fresh water out of the tap, but if there's no fresh water in the tap, then, that's appalling. It shouldn't be happening.
Helen?
I totally agree. And New Zealand also has a high rate of skin infections and possibly lack of access to clean water for washing is part of that issue.
Right. Raven Can, what do you think?
Well, I guess if you go overseas, there's a lot of places where they warn you not to drink the tap water, right?
I don't think that should be what we're aiming for, you know.
But it's sort of what, you know, it's kind of something that some places are, I mean, I'm certainly not defending it. It's just some places you're kind of used to that.
Yeah, I guess that's a bit of a deterioration from what we would expect in New Zealand as an option.
Helen?
I don't think it happens overseas, so it's okay here as an aspirational statement. I would like every Kiwi to be able to have drinkable tap water.
Just a couple of other things that were mentioned in the report. The report does also mention Pacifica people are particularly affected regarding housing that did lack the basics. Do you want to sort of explain that a bit for us? Who was affected?
Well, it was particularly problematic for Pacific peoples, and Asian people also had a high rate of lacking access to basic amenities. But when we considered uninhabitable housing, which was both lacking basic amenities and the household being on a very low income, so probably being unable to change their situation, the rates were still high for Pacific people, but dropped lower. But Asian people weren't so badly affected. Interestingly, although Māori had higher rates than Europeans, who always do the best, Māori did much better in these analyses than Pacific Asian and Miwok people, which is, you know, a positive, I guess.
Well, the report also, I mean, did show that exposure to poor housing did cross social, ethnic, demographic lines, so the cross-section was quite widespread.
And rural was particularly bad, I think.
Rural was particularly bad for the access to basic amenities, but it wasn't particularly bad for the uninhabitable housing. Urban areas were slightly worse for that.
So, yeah, Emma.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that there's a couple of other reports around this week, and the Child Poverty Indicators report was out today too. And I think people find it really difficult to follow this conversation because, you know, all of the measures are different and, you know, politicians will choose the measure that makes them look best and then the opposition will pick the measure that makes them look worse, and it just kind of goes around and around, you know. So the thing I like about this report is it highlights some things that people can really understand. So fresh water should be a basic right for all New Zealanders. You know, that's just bottom line, so you can then take steps to deal with
because
that.
Because you can see it, can't you? I mean,
yeah,
you can picture it.
You can, rather than trying to have a debate about, you know, oh, we've lifted this many children out of poverty or not, or what have you, you know, like you can actually just, it's a good tangible thing that you can act on.
So to that, Helen, what to come out of a report like this? What do we need to understand to drive a solution?
I think we probably need to understand that there's a lot of different things that being the push factors in this. So we're not going to have one solution that solves everything. There's no gold silver bullet for this. We're going to need a variety of different solutions for the different issues. So for drinkable tap water, that's going to look differently in urban and rural areas.
Very good to have you on the program, Helen. Thank you for that. That's Helen Vickers there, the research fellow at Hekāinga Oranga Housing and Health Research Program. Very good. It is 17 past four. The panel, RNZ National. Thousands of taxpayer-funded school lunches are being left uneaten by students each week. Now, a food rescue organisation, Kaivolution, in Hamilton estimates there can be up to 1,500 lunches left over from city schools each day from the Kaora Kaako program. Now, ACT leader David Seymour has waded in, calling the lack of rigour irresponsible, while National's Paul Goldsmith says the program is poorly targeted. It costs $5 for a primary school lunch and $7 for a secondary school lunch, and 200 students in Aotearoa get them. Leftover lunch reasons might include the menu, student absences, and whether students bring their own lunch, according to principals interviewed by staff. With us today is Western Community Centre Manager Neil Tolan. Neil, kia ora.
Kia ora. Kia ora, thanks for having me on.
Pleasure to have you on. Neil, look, how many lunches would you receive each day?
We would get anywhere from 100 to up to 400. That's the maximum level, but today was 100. And that's, okay. We've got a very, very big high school up the road, so it's a lot of students there.
And what do you do with the lunches?
So we have a daily... Coevolution do a daily drop-off of food, bread, and that kind of thing from our local supermarkets. We add it to that, and we have lots of families that will come in and collect those. Many of them are actually the Fraser High School students' parents, so it does go back to their homes.
Mm. And what sort of a demand, Neil, are you finding for these leftover lunches?
There is a strong demand, and so we know that the cost of them, so we know the value of them, and so we do our best to get them out there, and we'll target people to come in and pick them up, and our vulnerable families in the community, so that there is a demand out there, and they are going. There's no wastage from our end.
Yeah, okay. I'll ask you, Neil, and I'll ask the panellists this. Some people say, should others in the community get a free meal on the back of uneaten school lunches?
I think we can tweak the program a little bit, but I think that the lunches I can see going out are going back to those families in our community, and many of them do have students at those local schools, and they might be repackaged at the home that, you know, put in the frying pan, but they are going back into our community, and I think it's a circular.
I mean, come on, no one who's accepting leftover lunch is, you know, doing really well financially. So this is, you know, I think that's fine. I think Paul Goldsmith and David Seymour can find someone else to pick on.
Raven?
Oh, well, I think if you're going to make an error on this, it's better to have too many school lunches than not enough.
Yeah, and I think, you know, reading, I think was the Stuff article on this, and some of the kids are talking, you know, about feeling fucking mal, feeling shamed of, you know, having to pick up the free lunch. And, you know, you can totally understand that. I think that's something to be aware of as well. You know, in an ideal world, it would be great to serve lunches to everyone and for that not even to be a thing.
Right.
You know, certainly at our school, there'd be parents willing to, you know, I think, chip in so that everyone gets lunch, and then it's just something that you do. You have a meal with your classmates, and it's not a thing.
Neil, what sort of issues are you finding? One said that there was an increase in the need, actually because landlords are putting up rent by, you know, $30, $50, $100 a week. That type of thing. I mean, what are you hearing?
Yeah, it is that. The household rents, you know, most of their money is going on there, and then the food is the budget they can kind of cut, and so they have not a lot of money for the food budget, and that's why they're coming here, and that's why they're making use of these food rescue and community centres across the country. It just doesn't stretch.
Right.
And these are working families as well.
And these are working families as well, yeah. And so there is you're seeing quite a need at the Western Community Centre.
Yeah, there is, and also we have people here because they know their neighbours are struggling, so they'll come and get those lunches and drop them there. People are looking out for each other as well at the same time, and it's a good thing to be able to give these out, and the goodwill that's created in our community is a positive.
All right. Good to have you on, Neil. That's Neil Tolan, the Western Community Centre Manager. So Emma, when Paul Goldsmith says that if you are responsible for sending out taxpayer money, then you've got a duty to measure its effectiveness, not just for the taxpayer, but for the kids.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't have a point?
I'm not disagreeing that you should track what you're doing. I think that's totally right.
You should
track that and evaluate it. I think, but the core of the issue is, I don't think reducing the amount available because some of it is going into the community rather than directly to the kids would be the answer.
Raven?
Well, it would be like, let's say you've got a bunch of COVID vaccine and you have some left over. You know, should it go to someone, or should you aim to not quite have enough COVID vaccine? You know, flush it down the sink you don't have in your freedom camping.
Better than wasting it.
That'll show you.
Oh, that's that. Yeah, you've it's in my mind now. Vaccines going down the toilet because it was a targeted, non-targeted waste. Yeah. By the way, Raven, Marianne says, yes, Denmark has a queen. I know you wanted to know that. Who is a talented and highly respected woman.
Right. I mean, so she's probably one of those, you know, Scandinavian royalty where they like ride bicycles and do their own shopping, not the sort of pageantry types we're used to.
I don't know. Now, school lunches. I deliver supplies to the school lunch kitchens in Rotorua. I get given a leftover lunch regularly. I take it and I say thanks, and then I give it to anyone begging outside other premises I deliver to. So thank you for the your feedback this afternoon.
I think the thing is that from that is that nobody's taking it for granted.
Yeah,
right?
That's
you
right.
know, like communities are recognising when there's leftovers and doing something positive with that.
Yeah, yeah. Do you see it? Did you say that in the school that you're affiliated?
No,
with?
I'm just thinking what could you do to make kids not feel stink about getting a free lunch?
Because it's quite a thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
you can see it from a young person's perspective as well.
Yeah, of course you would. Yeah, yeah.
4:23, you're on the panel. NZ National. Is it ever okay to flash your lights at other drivers to warn them about speed cameras or police in the area? This practice is not as common as it used to be, according to the AA, and it is not technically an offence. Here's the AA Road Safety spokesperson, Dylan Thompson.
I think it's a lot less common than it was going back about 10 years ago. So I think it's relatively rare these days compared to what it used to be. Still happens occasionally. And there is a law around motorists using their lights in a way that could dazzle and confuse other drivers, which could sort of come into play in circumstances like this. But there isn't any specific law against the activity. The AA would certainly discourage people from flashing their lights if they are looking to warn other drivers so they can avoid being detected by the police for something. Now, of course, nobody wants to encourage that sort of behaviour, but I think it's a pretty small issue on the roads in the grand scheme of things, and ultimately enforcement isn't likely to change this. All we could do is encourage any drivers that are doing it to have a bit of a think about what they're doing and why, and whether they actually think that doing that is a good thing to do.
That is the AA Road Safety spokesperson Dylan Thompson there. I don't know, around the panel, let's start with you, Raven. Do you... Let's say you're going across the Wide Uppers and it's windy roads and there's a police car. You might suspect there's a police car and so you start to see the flashing lights. Do you respond in turn?
Wait a minute. So there's a. Why do I suspect it's a police car? Are they undercover or something? Or are they clearly marked police car, but I'm so intoxicated I can't tell? Do I know I'm driving? Am I aware of that? How?
Maybe I'm still on your bed. Speaking of which, we've got some more advice about King Singles. Anyway, but do you are you in the habit of flashing your lights?
No, and I'm one of those people who I used to. You know, back in the day, I would have done that.
So what made you change?
I don't know. I just now, it would not, it wouldn't occur to me. And it's not like, I don't know why, but when I came across this topic, the first thing I thought was, snitches get stitches.
And, haven't heard that for a while, Raven.
And so I'm not saying...
That's an old school saying.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that if you... I don't know how you would dob someone in if they're speeding in the opposite direction. You might have to do a U-turn and pursue them. But if you're flashing
it slows everyone down.
Yeah, but if you flash someone and warn them, you're sort of an accomplice. And then it's a conspiracy. and it's all bad, and I just don't see any good coming from
Emma,
it now.
Emma, do you
they
do this?
Escalated quickly. to a conspiracy. no, I don't, because it just has never occurred to me. But I like it when people do it to me. I quite find it quite friendly.
Yes,
you know?
That's
quite
right.
Nice. Hey, it's other road user, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like
a... You look like a criminal.
Yeah.
Hello, I will wink at you with my headlights.
It's kind of like that, eh?
Look, as a Māori driver, that's like too close. but yeah, I like it. And I also like it when people like flash their lights at you and they, you know, you let them in. I don't do that either, but I like it when other people do it to me. Yeah.
It's like a travel high five.
Yeah, it totally is. Like a little friendly.
Yeah. The only time you get dazzled is if you accidentally have your lights on high beam and there's a truck coming.
Yeah.
And then they do have the power to, like, hit you with laser beams.
Right. Andrew says, I don't agree with your AA, man. It's just as prevalent as always. Of course I flash to warm. Typical AA, out of touch.
Get that guy's phone number. Snatches get
typical AA, out of touch. I see lights flashed all the time and keep it up. Someone flashed me yesterday and I thought it was for police, so I slowed down, but actually there was ice on the road and they had not warned me. I may have crashed. I think there's a lot of pro flashing coming through. But interesting, you don't do it, but Rayburn, you used to do it, but you don't do it anymore.
No, I have changed.
I'll start doing it.
On the motorway to Damascus, I changed.
Now that I know it's not illegal.
Yes.
It's not illegal because you might be doing it by mistake. You know, you might be trying to turn on your
windshield
wipers.
Plausible deniability.
Yeah.
Oops. But I would have thought it isn't illegal. Regarding warning flashing lights, anything that slows down the self-entitled ute idiots has to be good for everybody, says Patrick. That's Patrick's point of view there.
There's quite a bit of beef out there, eh?
Yes.
AA, ute drivers.
Yes.
Are those speed camera detectors illegal?
Those ones that everyone used to put in their cars.
Mm.
My dad had one of those.
No, I don't know.
I've not seen anyone with them for ages.
For a long time. Yeah. Very good. A bit of response coming through there. This one for you, Raven. I was sold a bed.
This is such a scam.
The story is just coming through like a wrecking ball, you know, throughout the show.
advised it was a king single. I bought a king single sheet from the warehouse. Didn't fit. Too small. Assumed it was mislabeled. It was only $15 and I couldn't be bothered returning it.
Nice paraphrasing on the spot. Yeah.
I then bought a mattress protector online and I found the same issue. It was only at this point that I borrowed a measuring tape and discovered that it was exactly 4 feet by 6 feet. A good 10 minutes of Googling indicated it's a UK variant called a short small double.
What?
And as a short man, this sits with me. Fitted sheets in this size are non-existent. So that's quite a detailed email there, Raven, but
we're not at this thing where you're having to use four words to describe the mattress. I'm just using the word queen.
No.
You know,
I'm amazed at the legs this yarn has, eh?
Wow.
Yeah. This is going all week.
Yeah. So we can't happen with that, but maybe there should be some sort of a coverall, a universal sort of movement to do a universal queen bed or king bed or whatever. You're on the panel of 4:30. We have Emma Espiner and Raven Can with us this afternoon. To come on the program, we talk about building consent being granted for the Southland Charity Hospital that Blair Vining campaigned for before his death, and lending rules. Commerce and Consumer Affairs Minister David Clark has introduced legislation aimed at reducing merchant service fees. It's time for headlines.